Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with an update on an array of voter suppression and intimidation efforts underway that will culminate on Election Day. Eric Marshall, the co-leader of Election Protection, joins us to discuss what voters can do to exercise their democratic rights in the face of organized intimidation, trickery, and suppression. Then we'll go to Indiana and speak with Marjorie Hershey, who is a professor of political science at Indiana University in Bloomington. We will discuss the close Senate race and the likely impact of remarks by the Republican Tea Party candidate who defeated the Senate's elder statesman Richard Lugar in the primary, who is now in trouble for views that he expressed in a debate yesterday on pregnancy as a result of rape being what God intended. Then finally, we will take a broader look at the politics of abortion and how they are playing out in this election. Frank Schaefer, the son of one of the founders of the religious right, joins us to discuss the evangelical world's apparent determination to get Romney elected and Billy Graham's surprise endorsement of a Mormon in what appears to be a renouncement of the evangelist's vow after Richard Nixon's fall from grace not to endorse any politicians. And joining us now is Eric Marshall, the manager of Legal Mobilization for the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law. He's also the co-leader of Election Protection, the nation's largest voter support coalition, and plays a leading role in several election reform coalitions aimed at combating voter suppression legislation and advocating for policies that will expand access to our democracy. Welcome to Background Briefing, Eric Marshall.
Thanks for having me.
And apparently, if you've driven around Cincinnati and Cleveland and other inner city areas where you have predominantly African-American neighborhoods in the key swing state of Ohio, there have been billboards up saying voter fraud is a felony, 3.5 years and a $10,000 fine. Hardly an accident that they showed up in heavily Democratic neighborhoods, and apparently, they've actually been forced to take them down. So that's a pretty obvious form of voter, not so much voter suppression, but voter intimidation. What other examples are out there, Eric?
Yeah, you know, we are very, very happy that those billboards came down. You know, the foundation behind the billboards negotiated to stay secret in their contract. And both billboard companies came out and said, you know, that's wrong for you to hide behind the secrecy clause and either you need to disclose who you are or we need to take the billboards down. And the foundation chose to bring the billboards down, which just, again, reinforces the fact that those billboards were not some innocent attempt to educate voters. They were a targeted attempt to stigmatize a community and an attempt to prevent people and restrict eligible Americans from voting. And so we're happy that the billboards came down, obviously trying to make sure that we empower voters through the 1-866-R vote hotline, the National Election Protection Coalition, so voters have the resources and information they need to vote on Election Day. You know, and that's just one thing we've seen. Something that we're still following up on is we've received calls from the 1-866-R vote hotline about live phone calls to voters in Florida and in Virginia. We've also received reports of voters in Indiana receiving these live phone calls telling voters they can vote over the phone, which is patently false. Just this week, supervisors of elections in a number of counties in Florida had to send out information telling voters that there have been these fake letters coming out under letterhead from the county government telling them that they may not be citizens and have to respond in 15 days in order to get their registration restored, which are not true and which are fraudulent letters. So we have seen these attempts to trick voters into not voting on Election Day or voting incorrectly through these tactics.
Well, the way to figure out who's doing it is that who is being targeted.
You know, I mean, oftentimes these tactics have been targeted at communities of color, Latino voters, new Americans, young people have been particularly susceptible to these tactics. It's actually interesting, in the instance in Florida, you know, there actually have been registered Republicans that received these letters. So, you know, it's no matter who you're targeting with these efforts, if you are taking steps to restrict the ability of eligible Americans to exercise their fundamental right, one of the most precious rights we have as Americans, to restrict someone's ability to exercise that right is just wrong. No matter who you're targeting, we think it's wrong and we're going to stop them. And not only are we going to try to find out who's doing it and stop them, but we want to make sure that we're uplifting voters and we're empowering. That's what's important, right? That every American who's eligible is able to participate, because that's what makes our democracy so great. And so that's why we run the 1-866-OUR-VOTE hotline, where voters can call with any questions or problems, and we provide resources on our website at 866-OUR-VOTE.org, because we're in the business of making sure people can vote no matter who they're voting for.
So, again, I'm speaking with Eric Marshall, the manager of legal mobilization for the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law. He's also the co-leader of Election Protection, the nation's largest voter support coalition, and plays a leading role in several election reform coalitions aimed at combating voter suppression legislation and advocating for policies that will expand access to our democracy. So, in another very key swing state, Florida, there are giant billboards along the interstate corridor there on connecting all the eastern beach towns in Florida, saying one of them shows Obama bowing before the Saudi king, pointing out how much gas was when he came in and how much it is now. And the other one says Stop Obama. It shows a nuclear warhead with Iran painted on it. The warhead is aimed at Israel. That's clearly targeting the area's many Jewish voters. So that, again, I guess is in the category of voter, intimidation, influence, but not suppression.
Well, you know, there is a fine line here between political speech, no matter how objectionable you find it, and deceptive and intimidating practices. Now, you might find those billboards objectionable in how they portray the president or the issues. But really what we are focused on are specific kinds of activities that really is not about exercising your First Amendment right. I'm talking about deceiving voters, telling them that the election's on Wednesday as opposed to Tuesday, or telling them they can vote by phone. We think it's very important that the state and federal government take steps, because right now our laws are deficient, to combat those. We need stronger laws that say it's clearly illegal to deceive a voter about the time, the place, the manner, the political affiliations of candidates, and that if credible evidence of these tactics comes forward, that the government, a trusted source, the United States or the state government, will immediately put out corrective information to say that, no, this flyer, this phone call, this email is false, and here's the real information, because that's the danger of these kind of people that operate in the shadows of this whole democracy and put this false information out. So we want to make sure that we're countering it, but we also strengthen the laws. And unfortunately, this entire debate about restrictive ID laws, this entire debate about restricting ability to vote, has all been in the name of fighting voter fraud, when really these kind of tactics, these nefarious tactics about tricking voters into voting incorrectly or not voting at all, that is the real fraud that's being perpetrated on democracy. And unfortunately, too many governors and state legislators decided to take a different path and go down a path of choosing what ID voters need to vote, as opposed to passing laws that we think would strengthen our government.
Well, Eric Marshall, this notion of voter fraud is being clearly pushed by the Republican Party and big Republican donors. And even Fox News, during the recall election in Wisconsin, they set up a special voter fraud task force, which they promoted on air, again, with this idea that the fraud exists when statistics make it pretty clear that it doesn't. And it's interesting, I was just watching after the final and third and final debate the other night, the Fox News ran a focus group conducted by Frank Lutz, and this was supposed to be a bunch of independent voters, when it was clear that they were all hand-picked ideologues who were billed as having voted for Obama in 2008 and now had buyer's remorse. But as the focus group proceeded, it became clear that these people were just spitting venom about Obama, and it's impossible to believe that they ever voted for him in any case. But I bring this up because Frank Luntz has apparently did a focus group for these three films, these DVDs that are now showing up in people's mailbox. The most egregious of all is a DVD that claims that Obama is the love child of an illicit relationship between his mother and Frank Marshall Davis, a Communist Party loyalist. Again, this DVD, that's not in the category of that you're dealing with, right? That's just a good old-fashioned dirty trick?
You know, what we do with the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights and Law, we do with Election Protection, is we're trying to make sure that eligible Americans who wish to participate in democracy can. And we're focused on, you know, providing the resources and tools for the 1-866-R-VOTE hotline and the 866rvote.org website, and to make sure that voters have that information they need. If they have questions or problems, they can reach us through those means. If there are things that we see out there that inhibit the ability of people to go out and vote on Election Day, whether it's by election officials not properly training poll workers, not properly processing registration forms, election officials purging rolls inaccurately and catching eligible Americans, World War II veterans sometimes, in these citizenship purges, if it's, you know, politicians trying to choose what ID voters need to show to participate in our democracy, you know, restricting the ability of community groups to go out in their communities and help voters register so they can become empowered. You know, those are the things that we're focused on and things that we're trying to prevent, because we want to make sure that our democracy and the ability of people to get to that ballot box, to be able to vote effectively, that they have the resources they need. And if there are things that we think, whether it's politicians or the system or the structures or third-party groups, are staying in their way, we want to do things, we want to take steps to stop that. And that's what we're focused on in this election.
So, Eric Marshall, what happens on Election Day? There's a rumor afoot that there's going to be an awful lot of poll watchers, poll monitors, I'm not sure the exact term, that will be largely sent out by the Republican Party. And apparently under law, and elections, of course, are state issues, so I imagine there's a patchwork of laws here involved. But since all of the money and attention is on the swing states, you know, just focusing on them is easy. There's so few of them, and I guess the rest of the country doesn't even know there's an election going on. But if you have, as some people expect, a lot of these people showing up that will challenge voters as they line up to vote, my understanding is that's actually legal, even though it smacks of Jim Crow.
You know, most states have laws in place in terms of what people can do inside and outside a polling place. And there are states that permit credentialed individuals to challenge eligibility of voters, and the laws vary. We take any time, any hint or inkling of people that we feel might be over-aggressive inside a polling place or taking steps that we think could inhibit the ability of people to vote very seriously. At the same time, oftentimes these are more scare stories and scare tactics than anything else. There's a lot of smoke, and oftentimes the fire is a lot smaller than the smoke, because if you're trying to keep people from voting, you're going to make statements about how difficult it's going to be. You want to make it sound like there's going to be a lot of challenging, and it's too much of a hassle. And, you know, that oftentimes has a bigger impact, and what's behind it is not as big. And so we're obviously going to, through the Election Protection Coalition, we have been and we're going to continue to work with county and state election officials to make sure that they follow the policies and law in those states, and that people that would restrict the ability of people to vote, if that happens, we hear about it through the 1-866-R-VOTE hotline, our field programs, that we remove them. But also, it's equally important. So while we're going to remain vigilant, while we're working with election officials, while we're going to monitor the problems on Election Day, it's important that voters know that voting most often is and should be easy. And if you know what your your registration is up to date and you're properly registered, you know what identification you need to bring with you on Election Day. States have various identification rules. We're not just talking about photo ID. Some states you need to bring a non-photo ID with you. So you know what you need to bring with you, and you know where you vote, your polling place and your precinct, because some polling places have more than one precinct. If you as an American voter know all of those things going into the polling place on Election Day, then voting should be easy. And if you have a problem arises, you know to say no, not to be turned away. And you should know to call us at 1-866-OUR-VOTE, where you can find out the information about your registration, ID, and polling place, but also report a problem so we know about it and we can address it immediately. And we feel that if all voters become voting VIPs by taking those steps, that voters will not have a problem on Election Day and will have what we strive for in our democracy, which is a day where majority of Americans come out and vote and they're able to vote for the candidate of their choice.
But if you have these billboards that seem to be designed because they have been placed in minority areas, particularly African-American areas in the inner cities of Cleveland and Cincinnati in the key swing state of Ohio, now, admittedly, they've been taken down, but the intention would seem pretty clear that people are being warned that they're going to be somehow pulled over and charged with a $10,000 fine or given 3.5 years in jail I'm just curious to try and figure out where such lists exist to have the evidence to challenge people. What are these people going to be doing? You know, just looking at the people lined up? I mean, it seems to sort of smack of profiling to me.
That's definitely a concern. How does one know what an eligible voter looks like? How does one recognize who someone is not properly registered is? Some of that is subjective, and we definitely are concerned that if someone that's not fully understand the process and why someone could be in a certain circumstance, they don't understand what that means, they could engage in profiling, which could impact and inhibit certain types of voters, particularly communities of color. And this is not new. There have been tactics in past elections, where there have been attempts to challenge voters of a particular race or a particular age group and keep them from voting. It's unfortunate that certain people view voter suppression as a campaign tactic. It's an unfortunate aspect of our democracy. We think it's wrong, and we're trying to stop it. But it does happen, and it is sometimes targeted at certain voters.
Well, I've seen a film taken, I think, in the 50s, of Justice Rehnquist, then a lawyer, challenging people at the polls in Arizona, I think it was. He later became the head of the Supreme Court. So there's clearly a tradition, if you will, of this kind of activity. But I take it that the main point that you're trying to make here to our audience is that people should be aware that this is a possibility, but more importantly, should recognize that they should not be intimidated.
Yes. You bring up a good point. There's a history of these kind of tactics. What's happening this election cycle, whether it's their politicians choosing restrictive forms of ID, attacks on community-based registration groups, this idea of these challenges at the polling place to remove people who shouldn't be voting from the rolls, these aren't new tactics. These aren't new arguments and debates. We've been having them since Jim Crow laws and since emancipation, since after Reconstruction. And we're continuing to have these fights, unfortunately, and it just shows that there's more work for us to do to achieve the ideals in our country. And I'm sure your listeners are upset right now and frustrated about what they're hearing or what they've been reading about. Well, the most important way that you guys can fight back against this is to be informed voters to vote and to make sure that your friends and family, they vote and they are empowered and they have the information. Be organizers for democracy. Go to our website, 866ourvote.org, and download voter rights flyers. Tell your family about the 1-866-OUR-VOTE hotline. If you live in other states, other cities, spread the word. Make sure everyone knows. We have a smartphone app that's available on all smartphones. You can get by texting Our Vote, OURVOTE, to 90975. That's Our Vote to 90975. Get that app and become informed, but also inform and empower your communities. If we all do our part and make sure that everyone we know is properly empowered to vote on Election Day, then that's how we're going to fight back against this voter suppression.
Well, just in closing, Eric Marshall, is there any sense, do you have a sense that this is going to be better or worse this year than other years? My understanding is I get all kinds of paranoid mail about, black box voting and stuff and how the machines are controlled by Romney's family and stuff like that. Not suggest that maybe the son has invested in the company, but you talk to Democratic officials, they don't seem to be worried. They say, we've got a good ground game, and we've learned from what happened in Ohio in 2004. So what's your sense of in the overall picture of voter suppression? Is this going to be better or for worse, or for example, the Democrats who feel that that the 2004 vote was stolen in Ohio, are they more proactive?
I mean, look, every election cycle, I'm sure there are people like me and other people that will say this is the worst I've seen it. This is going to be the biggest problems in Election Day. This is going to happen. It happens in every election. We get caught up. It's 2 weeks away. People get caught up in the stories, and I think this is worse than it was 4 years ago. Clearly, there are things that have happened in the last couple of years that do cause us to worry. Like I said, there are problems with our system of elections. We register through a system, a paper-based registration system that was created in the 19th century by the Whig Party. It's outdated, it's cumbersome, it's wasteful. And in 2006, it led to between 4 and 6 million eligible Americans on the outside of our democracy. But what we did not do in the subsequent years was to address it. We decided to, or not we, but certain leaders in states decided that they wanted to pass laws that we feel restrict the ability of people to vote. So there are problems with our system of election that have not been addressed. You have always a part, you know, and it's becoming a more partisan environment. People are politicizing the act of voting. So there are concerns that exist out there. You know, there are voting law changes that have happened in a number of states, and there have been changes to those changes because we've been very successful at fighting in the courts. So you have more, you know, potential for more confusion. So there are issues out there that are of concern, and they, while I, you know, this has been going on for a number of years, things change. Every year is a little different. So yeah, there are things, reasons for people to be concerned, and I think that there is a reason to be vigilant. But again, I don't want to sound like a broken record, but the most important thing is that voters know their rights, they know what they need to bring with them, they know they're registered, they know where they're supposed to vote, and they know to call us at 1-866-OUR-VOTE if they have a problem. And hopefully, on election day, our phones won't be ringing, and we will be, you know, I'd love to be kicking back and not doing much. I think I will be busy, but I think, you know, I think it's important to you know, measure the rhetoric and be concerned, but, you know, the majority of Americans are going to go to the polls and they're going to vote, and that's what's important. And they're not going to have a problem, and that's what's important. And their vote's going to count, and that's what's important. And, you know, after the election, we'll continue to work, and we'll continue to bring issues to legislators, and we'll try to create a more modern system of voter registration that meets the 21st century. We'll try to get laws that are passed to combat deceptive and practices and voter intimidation, and we'll try to expand the ability of people to vote early. We're going to continue to try to improve the system every election year, use this as a lesson and evidence to try to improve the system.
Well, Eric Marshall, I thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Eric Marshall, who's the manager of legal mobilization for the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law. He's also the co-leader of Election Protection, the nation's largest voter support coalition, and plays a leading role in several election reform coalitions aimed at combating voter suppression legislation and advocating for policies that will expand access to our democracy. We're going to take a brief station break and we're back and go to Indiana to talk about the Republican candidate for Senate who said that pregnancies resulting from rape are what God intended. Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Professor Marjorie Hershey, who teaches political science at Indiana University in Bloomington. Her research focuses on political parties, campaigns, and elections. She is the author of Party Politics in America, the major political parties text, now in its 15th edition. And she received the American Political Science Association's Epstein Award for Innovation in Teaching. Welcome to Background Briefing, Marjorie Hershey.
Thank you.
And clearly, the very close Senate election in your state of Indiana is now, I think, I don't know how much it's up for grabs, but it's certainly getting the nation's attention. The candidate who knocked off the Senate's elder statesman, Richard Lugar, in the Republican primary with Tea Party support and support from the Club for Growth and others, he specifically attacked Richard Lugar's record of bipartisan problem-solving, saying the time for collegiality is past, it's time for confrontation. He also said that his idea of bipartisanship is when Democrats agree with him. How much was the defeat of Lugar and his contemptuous view of cooperation and bipartisanship, was that already a factor in this race before he put his foot in his mouth in terms of his religiosity?
Oh, it absolutely was. One of the things that we saw very early after the primary was that Mr. Murdoch turned out to be not a bad loser, but a bad winner. Within a couple of weeks after the primary, he was still attacking Senator Lugar in his fundraising appeals, and as a result, making a lot of Lugar supporters rather irritated with him. So this has really been a theme in the race ever since before the primary was held.
And it seems ironic in many ways that Murdoch's candidacy for the United States Senate is the only Senate candidate. He's the only Senate candidate running for whom Mitt Romney has taken out time to make a TV ad, which I believe he just did yesterday or maybe the day before, but very recently.
And yeah, yesterday was the first time I had seen it, and it struck me at the time, wow, what unfortunate timing for Romney.
Right. So the question now is, and there's obviously pressure on Romney to pull the commercial and to distance himself from Murdoch, but so far that doesn't look like it's happening.
No, I don't really think Romney can. He did something relatively similar with Aiken in Missouri, the guy who claimed that women's bodies somehow have the ability to separate out rape from other forms of sexual activity and therefore to shut themselves down rather than developing a pregnancy. Romney at first said he thought that this was a terrible statement and called on Aiken to get out of the race. Aiken declined to get out of the race. And after a while, as I'm sure both Aiken and Romney were well aware, there was no alternative for the Republicans but to stand behind Aiken because they can't concede that Senate race.
So this candidate, who's a geologist by trade and is currently the state treasurer of Indiana, this remark came at the end of a debate against his challenger, the Democratic centrist Joe Donnelly, who also I think has fairly conservative and religiously based views on abortion. What Murdoch is now trying to say is that his opponents are trying to twist his comments. They seem pretty straightforward. I mean, does anybody buying that in Indiana?
No, I don't think so. But I think, frankly, there aren't an awful lot of people who were very undecided on this race. I think this is very typical of the national picture right now, where what we see is that a good chunk of the population decided probably months ago what they were going to do with respect to the presidential race and in Indiana with respect to the Senate race. So basically these candidates are talking to a very small proportion of people who remain undecided. Those people may not have been paying attention a month or two ago, and they are probably the people who are the least likely to decide on the basis of issues. They are much more likely to decide on the basis of their sense of the candidate's character, their feeling for whether or not the candidate seems like a nice person, a good person, an honest person. And so this really isn't a conversation anymore about whether or not Murdoch meant one thing or another. It's a conversation about whether Murdoch is out of the mainstream.
Again, I'm speaking with Professor Marjorie Hershey, who teaches political science at Indiana University in Bloomington, and she's the author of Party Politics in America. So when did the early voting start? Is it already underway?
Early voting has been underway for about 10 days in Indiana, and by all accounts, it seems to be just about the same as it was in 2008, which means relatively heavy. But the people who Murdoch and Donnelly are aiming at right now are not the early voters. The early voters are the people who are partisan, who know who they want to vote for. And they're basically evenly divided in the polls, which means that they are both right now aiming at a very small group of people whose interest in politics is probably less than that of most other people, whose knowledge about politics is less than most other people.
Well, but it has broader implications for the Republican Party nationally, surely, Professor Hershey, because they are trying to close the gender gap with women, where they are considerably behind among women. 8% women support support Obama over Romney. Romney, of course, enjoys a 14% lead amongst men over Obama. Again, I guess the notion that the candidate who, as I mentioned, is the only Senate candidate that Romney's made a TV ad for is trying to sort of backpedal furiously and say people are twisting his words. Why don't we just play his words? Yes, let's play his words now so that we can really get a feeling for, in fact, whether anybody's twisting them.
You know, this is that issue that every candidate for federal or even state office faces, and I, too, certainly stand for life. I know there are some who disagree, and I respect their point of view, but I believe that life begins at conception. The only exception I have for to have an abortion is in that case of the life of the mother. I struggled with it myself for a long time, but I came to realize life is that gift from God, and I think even when life begins in that horrible situation of rape, that it is something that God intended to happen.
So there you have it, Marjorie Hershey. He did say that God intended it to happen. I mean, what is he now claiming the day after is somehow being twisted?
He and the head of the National Senatorial Campaign Committee, John Cornyn of Texas, are both claiming all he meant to say was that he believes that life is precious. As we can both hear, he said a little bit more than that in that quote. And I think that the reason that this is so central now to our discussion of what's going on is that the national race is very close. It's obvious with respect to the House of Representatives that the Republicans will retain control of the House. The presidential race is tied. The race for the Senate's control by party is extremely close. The Republicans need either 3 or 4 net gain of seats in order to control the Senate. That means that basically it's those 3 or 4 seats in the Senate that stand between a divided government and total Republican control of Washington, of the White House, and both houses of Congress. This seat in Indiana was formerly and is currently Republican-held. So if it turns out that the Republicans lose this seat, if Murdoch loses as a result of this comment and many others, then the Republicans would need to make up by getting 2 other Democratic seats to go their way, and that will be extremely difficult.
And also, as it happens, on the same day of this remark from the Republican Tea Party Senate candidate Richard Murdoch, Federal Court, the 7th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in Chicago, blocked the Indiana's defunding of Planned Parenthood, which was pushed through by Governor Mitch Daniels, trying to cut. He signed legislation back in May of 2011, attempting to cut the organization off from funding. So it seems that the issue is front and center, is it surely?
Well, it is, and I think what's most important about it is that it shows what happens when we do have one-party control of a particular area of government in this time of very polarized political parties. Governor Daniels was able to do that because he had a Republican House and Senate in the state of Indiana, and so the Republican leadership used that time to try to defund state funding of Planned Parenthood, pass a right-to-work law, which would limit labor unions' organizing ability, and a whole series of other items on their wish list. This is what the Republicans would like to do in the nation as a whole. And that's why these very few Senate seats that are very highly contested are so extremely important right now, and why it is that the Republicans, whether or not they believe that Murdoch is valid in his views, have no other Republican alternative, so they are going to do everything they can to try to support him and eke through that victory.
But how is it affecting, though, Congressman Mike Pence's, he's a Republican congressman running for governor, he's called on Murdoch to apologize. Clearly, he must be feeling defensive, too.
I think that probably Representative Pence feels that if he did anything short of committing a felony between now and Election Day, he's going to win. He's been ahead all the way along. Romney has been ahead all the way along in Indiana. The only exception we have to that is the Murdoch and Donnelly race. Pence's opponent, John Gregg, who is the Democratic former Speaker of the Indiana House of Representatives, has been very explicitly trying to appeal to those Lugar Republicans who were so upset when Lugar lost the primary. So the Lugar supporters have really been a key target in this race, but I don't think that even if Mike Pence tried, he could lose the governorship of Indiana.
But the question remains, will the Lugar supporters support Donnelly, the centrist Democrat?
Normally what we would expect is that a lot of those people toward the end of the campaign as Election Day approaches would come home to the Republican Party, that they might object to what happened in the primary and they would stew about it for a while over the summer, but when push came to shove, rather than pulling the label of the other party, they would come back home to the Republican candidate. That's why the timing of this is very bad for Murdoch. This would be a time when those Lugar Republicans would need to be coming back home, and it may give them pause.
And I should think those among those potential swing voters, if you will, the Lugar supporters who are women, surely you'd have to give extra pause, wouldn't they?
It's also very important for the Republicans nationally because of the fact that given that they've got a problem now in Indiana, more of the Republican national money is going to have to pour into Indiana in advertising, and that means it's going to have to come out of some other close races where they would rather put it. There are not unlimited amounts of money, although goodness knows if you watch television these days, it appears that there are, but it seems clear that this is going to redirect some money from other close races in Montana, in various other parts of the country to Indiana, and that is not something the Republicans wanted to do.
Well, ironically, the fact that that Romney did so well in the first debate completely changed the financial landscape. The big donors were abandoning Romney. They thought he was going to lose, and the party was starting to pour tons of money into the House and Senate races, and now they've reversed that. So,
You know, it is very difficult for me to imagine that it could have played out any differently from a real switch in the race after the first debate, because the coverage of Romney's campaign in September had been so negative. He had done some things that were not optimal as a presidential candidate, but it had gotten to the point where, you know, when you're getting laughed at by Jay Leno and David Letterman, you really are considerably undervalued as a presidential candidate. So I think it was inevitable that Romney would bounce back when we got past that media story and had Romney actually presenting himself. After all, he's been debating for months now in the Republican nomination race. He's had a lot of practice at it. He's certainly a capable candidate. So his stock was kind of undervalued going into the beginning of October, and I thought it was inevitable, unless he simply fell on the floor and started to twitch during the debate, that he was bound to do better than expected.
Well, he certainly reached that threshold. So just in closing then, Marjorie Hershey, the fact that that the Republicans had the trifecta in Indiana, the governorship, and both branches of the legislature, and were able to push through that law banning unions or restricting unions, and also banning Planned Parenthood. Is there going to be any change, do you think, in the legislature?
I think that the legislature may well be even more Republican now after the 2012 election than it was before. And again, because we have such polarized politics and because the two parties are so closely matched in strength, it really puts a premium for either party on taking advantage of any time that it has unified control of the federal or a state government to pass as much legislation as it can. We've certainly seen that with respect to anti-union legislation in a lot of states, Ohio, Wisconsin, various other places, because the unions are the great source of support for the Democratic Party over time. And so when you are in a situation where you know your party may not have unified control 2 years from now, but you've got it now, you had better try to push through just as much as you possibly can before the voters take it away from you again.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Professor Marjorie Hershey.
You're most welcome.
Again, I've been speaking with Professor Marjorie Hershey, who teaches political science at Indiana University in Bloomington. Her research focuses on political parties, campaigns, and elections. She is the author of Party Politics in America, the Major Political Parties Text, now in its 15th edition. And she received the American Political Science Association's Epstein Award for Innovation in Teaching. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking about the politics of abortion.
But they'll make it a privilege, not a right, accessible only to the rich. Hey, pro-lifers need to dig themselves, because life don't stop after birth. And for a child born to the unprepared, it might even just get worse. The situation would surely change if they were to find themselves in it. Supporters of the H-bomb and firebombing clinics.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Frank Schaefer, who is the best-selling author of fiction and nonfiction. His parents, Francis and Edith Schaefer, were world-famous evangelical speakers and authors, and Frank previously worked for such figures as Pat Robinson, Jerry Falwell, and Focus on the Family's James Dobson. He, however, felt increasingly alienated and experienced a crisis of faith that ultimately led to his departure from the evangelical movement. His novels include Portofino and Saving Grandma, and his nonfiction books include Crazy for God, Patience with God, Faith for People Who Don't Like Religion or Atheism, and his latest, Sex, Mum, and God. Welcome to Background Briefing, Frank Schaefer.
Hi, Ian. Thanks a lot.
And clearly the gaffes, although this Senate candidate, Republican Tea Party Senate candidate in Indiana, was actually speaking from the heart, and he was saying exactly what he believed. But, of course, for the Romney campaign, it's a serious gaffe, and they are trying to close the gender gap with women. And it's worth noting that Murdoch, the candidate who put his foot in his mouth, although, again, he was saying what he believes, is the only Senate candidate that Romney has made TV ads for. And what I find extraordinary about this flap over this, Frank Schaefer, is that what Murdoch was saying is exactly consistent with the Republican Party platform, and these are the same views as Paul Ryan.
Yeah, well, you know, this thing that Romney keeps doing, which is having one thing in his platform or making a statement early in the campaign to get the far right on board, and then at the last minute, literally looking right into the lens of a camera and blatantly lying, not just changing his position, but saying, I never said that, or that's not my opinion. You know, whether it's getting out of Afghanistan by 2014, which he said was a huge mistake, to announce that, and then in the debate he says he's going out. It's the same thing with abortion. So the official Republican platform that he signed on to as their presidential candidate, and what Murdoch said or Aiken or any of these people, it's all one and the same. But when you get to the actual statements and they embarrass the campaign now in this later stage while they're trying to get reasonable Americans who disagree with these positions to vote for them, then Romney's technique seems to be to just blatantly lie and say that's not what I stand for, or I don't believe that, or that's not my position. And obviously, you know, you're not supposed to be able to have it both ways, but he thinks he can, and this is another instance. So on one day he's shooting an ad with this guy who, by the way, his extreme pro-life positions, and extreme even for the so-called pro-life and anti-abortion movement, were known before he made this statement, just like with Aiken. Anybody who had known about these men knows they held these positions. These are not surprises. But Romney made the ad endorsing him, somehow calculating that this guy would have enough sense to lie in the same way that Romney is. And of course, in a funny way, you know, Murdoch and Aiken and these other people have made the mistake of having more actual integrity than Romney, in that they actually have said what they think rather than covering it up the way Romney does at this stage of the campaign. And that's really the difference between them. Not ideological, it's just Romney has the sense to lie and to confuse the issues and to say he's changed his mind or not say he's changed his mind and just pretend as if he's always held another position. And abortion is one of the areas that he's as extreme as any of these people, at least today. Although if you go back to the day he was governor of Massachusetts, he might as well have been a moderate Democrat in terms of the way he governed here. So I guess the difference is that the whole Republican Party is incredibly and severely anti-abortion and anti-woman, really. Romney is for whatever will get him elected. But of course, that doesn't protect women's rights, because he is going to be president if he's elected with a majority in Congress that is to the right of him, who will have their way with him and make him stick to his extreme anti-abortion, anti-feminist positions. And that's really the big danger. It's who's coming up in Congress and who's already there and the way they will have their way with him, and of course also the court appointments. So Romney is not, the fact that he flip-flops and the fact that he was in Massachusetts as a moderate, now he's far to the right, and now coming back to the center to get the national vote. Instead of comforting people, it should dismay anyone who understands that he'll do whatever it takes to be in power, and that will include working with a Republican majority in Congress, which means he'll do exactly what they want, and they are radicals.
Again, I'm speaking with Frank Schaefer, best-selling author of fiction and nonfiction. His parents, Francis and Edith Schaefer, were world-famous evangelical speakers and authors and essentially founders of the religious right and the anti-abortion movement from which Frank broke. And he's the author. His latest book is Sex, Mom, and God. But Frank, this is clearly a very important issue, and I it may well be a motivating issue to get people to vote for Obama, which is what the challenge is in the next few days.
Right.
In the polls, it's always clear that the Republicans lead in likely voters because their people are fired up. It's not clear that the Democrats are going to show up. But there was a very surprising Gallup poll taken earlier this month in the 12 swing states, and they found that 39% of women who are registered voters said that abortion was the most important issue for women in this election.
Right.
And with the Supreme Court likely, you know, with one vote away from overturning Roe v. Wade, a goal that, by the way, Romney has reaffirmed on the campaign trail, you would think that Murdoch is just absolutely pouring gasoline on a fire that Romney is hoping to put out.
Well, the thing is, as I said, you know, Romney is buying time by barefaced lying. And one of the things he lies about is somehow that things will not be as extreme if he's elected as his positions indicate in the positions of the party. But I want to tell you something provide an interesting lens to see this through. There are folks who totally understand where Romney's coming from, and sadly, a lot of Democrats don't, because they're not motivated enough, which is really a bad sign and a basic failure of intelligence when it comes to some Democrats who have, quote-unquote, been disappointed by Barack Obama, and so they lack some enthusiasm. Well, let me tell you something. There is one group of people who totally understand where Romney's coming from, and that is the evangelical Christian community. that I come from, and in my memoir, Crazy for God, talk about why I left that community. One of the people I knew in that community, in fact, first met him when I was 9 years old, was Franklin Graham, Billy Graham's son, who's now taken over the Billy Graham organization. And they have not only endorsed Romney, and Franklin is a rabidly anti-abortion, anti-feminist, anti-gay, anti-everything, to the right of people like Dr. Dobson, for instance. He's the most extreme evangelical person there is. He's sort of our evangelical version of the Taliban.
Well, he's very anti-Muslim, too, and anti-Obama.
Totally anti-Muslim.
Yeah.
Well, and he's a xenophobe, and you know, he says that Obama's not a Christian and so on. You can go down the list. He's an extremist. He's even made birther comments at certain points. Look, Franklin Graham got his ailing father, who is on the border of senility, to sign off on a full-page ad endorsing Romney. And then a publication, a gay publication, actually pointed out that at the same time they were endorsing Romney, they listed Mormonism as a cult, not occult, but a cult, a sect, a heresy, on their website. And within 24 hours, they had scrubbed it. Now, from my point of view, there should be no religious test for office, and I don't care if the guy's an atheist, a Mormon, agnostic, a Presbyterian, or none of the above, or Jewish, or whatever else. If he's going to be a good president, fine. But you have to understand, from the evangelical point of view, you know, this is equivalent to a leader of a civil rights organization saying, well, you know, the Jim Crow laws weren't so bad after all, or a right-wing, you know, free market capitalist all of a sudden embracing communism. So you have to understand, in the evangelical mindset, for them to scrub their website of the cult definition of the Mormon Church goes to show that they literally not only will stop at nothing to get rid of President Obama, but that they have actually understood where Romney's coming from. He has checked off every point on their agenda. He's anti-immigrant. He's anti-black. He is anti-women. He is anti-abortion. He will reverse Roe v. Wade. They will stop gay marriage. They will stop gay rights. These people are xenophobic reactionaries. And let me tell you again, if the Billy Graham organization is willing to sell its theological soul, if it is willing to do the equivalent of the Saudi royal family, if they suddenly announce that Mecca is no longer important to Islam, you know, you can't think of extreme enough example as the to show the equivalent of what it means for the Billy Graham organization to sell their soul to the devil, as far as they're concerned, by scrubbing all references to Mormonism as being unchristian. Now you know how the far, far, far religious right is playing footsie with this candidate. And if they get it, and they're willing to literally sell their theological soul to get Mitt Romney elected, you better understand what's coming down the pike. And that is a man who is going to make George W. Bush look like a free thinker. You know, we already got one president who was a bit dim-witted, but in the clutches of the neoconservative movement. We got two wars on a credit card, $4 trillion, 50,000 Americans injured, 5,000 of us killed, 6,000 if you count in all the Iraq and Afghanistan deaths, let alone other people. You can only begin to understand what the Tea Party-dominated Congress unleashed with Mitt Romney is going to mean when you have backers like Franklin Graham willing to sell their soul by now saying that Mormonism is just another evangelical religion, as it were. And like I said, I don't care. There should be no test for running for office. But given their philosophical presuppositions, this is really them actually going further than I would have even predicted these evangelicals went. And if you read my book, Crazy for God, my memoir, or my new book, Sex, Mom, and God, you'll understand that I come from the heart of the movement. I really understand it. Our family, the Schaefer family, were key players in it. I know the Grahams personally. I know Franklin personally. I knew Billy personally. And literally, 20 years ago, if you had asked Billy or Franklin, would you ever do this, they would have said we would kill ourselves first because it would be a denial of Jesus Christ. And so in their own book, they so believe in the xenophobic, reactionary program against, for instance, women's rights that will be carried out with a democratically elected but thereafter non-democratically functioning president who's going to be using every trick in the book, with Congress and the rest to roll back the clock on all these civil rights that we now take for granted, better wake up and smell the coffee, Democrats, because these guys, if they understand who this man is and are willing to do this in terms of scrubbing their references to Mormonism on their websites and endorsing him with full-page ads, you know, if Democrats don't understand where Romney's coming from, the Billy Grahams of this world and the Franklin Grahams certainly do, and that should be a really cautionary flag going up on everybody's horizon.
So, Frank, you basically, this obviously alarms you, the fact that Romney got together just a couple of days ago with Frank Graham and Billy Graham. And
yeah, but if you understand where Franklin's coming from, I'm not kidding you. This is not hyperbole. It is as if Romney was now working hand in glove with the Ku Klux Klan.
Right. Well, it shows you how Franklin Graham
is as xenophobic reactionary as any human being alive on this earth right now. You'd have to go to the Taliban to find anybody.
Right. Well, but presumably, when they sat down together, Franklin Graham was satisfied with the promises that Romney made.
Absolutely.
And totally bought in. And shows you how desperate these evangelicals are and the evangelical movement is to get this guy out of the White House.
Well, and you got to understand something about Romney, and this is where theology does matter. There shouldn't be a theological litmus test, but let's remember that unlike most evangelical organizations and churches or the Roman Catholic Church, Jewish temples and synagogues, or even Muslim mosques, you know, Islam and Christianity do not have secret rituals for an inner circle. Nobody pretends Mormonism doesn't. In other words, when you're a bishop like Romney, you've gotten used to the idea that you have one faith out there for the plebeians, the suckers, the regular people, and then there's a little inner core that run the money, that run the theology. They have their own sacred and secret rituals. And this idea of secretiveness, of course, carried over with him into his non-publishing of his tax records, unlike any president in any election for the last 10 presidents. His idea of secretiveness and kind of inner workings fits perfectly with the Graham family that have always run the Billy Graham organization like a private family fiefdom, and now with a nepotistic inheritor in Billy's son, Franklin, taking it over as if they're North Korean dictators. You know, how you take over a Christian ministry, I don't know, although I almost did it with my father's, and I write about how I left and why.
Frank, we got to wrap it up, I'm afraid.
Well, let me just say that the Graham involvement with these guys and the pro-life thing intersect in that if they didn't understand where Romney was coming from, they would not be scrubbing all references to Mormonism from their website. And if you don't see that as proof, then I think it's just only because people are so outside that evangelical community, they don't get how dramatic that is and what a big deal it is to have a third of the electorate turned loose by Billy Graham.
Well, Frank, we've got to end it here, and I thank you so much for joining us again. I've been speaking with Frank Schaefer, best-selling author. His latest book is Sex, Mom, and God. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. I'll be back again tomorrow at 5 p.m. with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.